You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
5 minutes after 10, of course, the matric results on paper look pretty decent. There is an upward trajectory and an upward sloping curve, depending on what it is that you are trying to represent on a graph, is often a good thing. And 75.1% of matriculants managed to pass last year. Well, the question is, when I make a claim like that, am I stating something that, although true on the face of it, is a deceptive number to chuck out, or is it actually accurate? And critics overstate how cautious we need to be and must be in understanding how well our matriculants have in fact done. And we have this bun fight every single year, and it's mind-boggling to me that we haven't yet, between civil society organizations and pressure groups and the state, had some overlapping consensus methodologically about how to read these results and how to present them in a way that does justice to the hard work of our matriculants, and at the same time, of course, also speaks to the overall picture of the state of our matric, the quality of those matric passes, and the rest of the value chain in basic education. So we're going to be unpacking all of that data now, and as you listen to the experts, because it's a complicated matter, don't have to phone in off the bat, but as you listen, just tell me what comes up for you. You can SMS me 31702 31567, and then of course if you then want to engage upon reflection with the Department of Basic Education or with Equal Education, you're more than welcome to do so. The lines will be open throughout. Let me welcome my guests. Leanne Janssen-Thomas from Equal Education, Head of Policy and Training, is in our Cape Talk studio. Last time she was on the show, it was not a very lekker topic, but she absolute justice when it came to the question of sanitation and more broadly the quality of the structures that we call schools in some part of the country. Leanne, happy new year to you, and welcome so much for coming back on this thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Hi, no problem. Hi, UCBS, and hello to everyone listening.
And here in the studio, we've got Patty Bariachi, who is the Deputy Director General of Basic Education for Planning, Information and Assessments. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy, busy schedule as a good civil servant and coming to engage on this very important topic, Patty.
Good morning, Eusebius, and good morning to your listeners.
Leanne, I'm going to start with you at a very high level, and then we can get into the details as we get along. When the Minister of Basic Education tells us 75.1% of those who set for the national exams in 2017 have passed, and we all clap because 75 sounds kind of cool, I don't know if it's still a B, sort of a B plus when I was in school, that's what you would get. It sounds like the class did pretty well. Why is that kind of top line number deceptive?
So the thing that the minister is announcing is she's calculating the number of matrics who passed over the number who have written. It's the traditional pass rate. Hmm. But as we have every year, Equal Education calculates a throughput pass rate, which is the number of matrics who passed divided by the grade 10 cohort or divided by the grade 2 cohort, so that you are actually looking at the number of learners who actually reached matric and not just the number who actually wrote the exams. And then the other thing is that the matric pass rate alone is not a good enough indicator of the quality of education in South Africa. We can't look at that pass rate in isolation. You have to be looking at other indicators of education quality, such as the international standardized tests that South Africa participates in. So anyone who says that the matric pass rates alone is a barometer of the health of our education system is being dishonest, because it can actually be quite a superficial and misleading indicator.
Okay.
So, yeah.
But I want to just take you up on the first issue. I mean, these things are not mutually exclusive. Presumably, we can say, of the people who set an exam, 75.1% passed it, and we can, to use one of my phrases of last year, walk and chew gum at the same time. The next day, we can continue the conversation and talk about how many kids were left behind. Why were they left behind? What is the quality of the passes? Why? And in fact, to her credit, the Basic Education Minister, in her prepared remarks before she gave the stats, was the first to acknowledge that there are systemic issues, including questions around the quality of some of the content in terms of how it's taught, etc., etc. So from the point of view of fairness in terms of the public discussion, It's not like the minister starts and stops by tossing out that number.
No, but I don't think that the department places enough emphasis on the number of learners who don't reach matric. And I think there is, it's not just the fault of the ministry, because we as the public, that matric pass rate is the stick that we use to beat the department with and that department officials beat schools with. So we as the public really need to shift and be saying, look, if the number of learners who reach matric and who write the exams increases alongside the number who actually pass, then we really have something to celebrate then.
Okay, before I bring in Patty, do two things for me. Define the real pass rate as far as Equal Education is concerned. Tell us how you arrive at it and what it is.
Okay, so the throughput pass rate, the numerator is the number of learners who actually pass, and your denominator is the number of learners who were in grade 10 2 years prior to that. So if that denominator goes down, you're going to have an increased matric pass rate. And if it goes up, your overall pass rate may decline slightly.
Okay, so what is the real pass rate?
So that number is actually closer to 50%. And we've looked at the trends over the last 4 or 5 years, and it hasn't been over the 50 mark. So that it isn't a perfect metric because of the number of learners who you may have repeating, for instance, the grade 2 year, or learn there's mortality rates to consider, but it is closer to the truth than the 75% is.
Okay, well, can't falter. You surely agree with Equal Education. Can we shake hands and go for lunch?
Yeah, we can go for lunch. in that, I think we have to go back that we did not come up with this national pass rate like yesterday. I mean, it's been over the years. It's been even before 1994, but maybe not in terms of the media focus. But since 1994, and in particular from 2000 onward, under the Lefe Sakada Smal, the pass rate became like the dominant obsession. And what we found is, which was quite annoying, was people would just take the number at the beginning of the grade one and divide and say you lost the 600,000. But I think now there's some kind of maturity in this discussion. And I like to say that Equal Education has taken grade two, because we have said that in grade one you have an inflation of underage, because there's no grade R in certain communities, so they send their children to grade one. So we are talking about just under 1.1 million. And the grade 10 figure, I've checked this as well, is about 1,050,000. So the denominators that are using that Equal Education is coming would be the same that we would come to. And the 50% would be there. And we have also used what the throughput rate. It's a dropout, but in a different way, we call it the throughput, looking at those who went through. And when you use the Stats South Africa data, and you look at people up to between 22 and 25, by the age 25, that 50% is probably right for those who are presently now. But in time, 5 years down the line, that'll grow to 60%. But compared internationally, we are not that far off, but we are below the mark compared to some international countries in that throughput. Now, I think to link this up, what we have not done before, but the credit to the minister, is the introduction of the second chance. In the past, you would announce the results. Those who have failed, you leave them to basically go along either through the supplementary or the repeat, or they may never take up any opportunity. So we need to look at how we move beyond that 60%. But even in putting them through, getting a certificate is not any guarantee to a job or a better life.
Okay, we're going to get to that. We'll place the real person with that matric certificate in the context of an actual material world where there are other obstacles you will face post-secondary education, the world of work, etc. But we can't proceed to that unless we know whether there is material agreement on the so-called real pass rate. Do you accept that in reality, fewer than 50, the pass rate is actually below 50%?
Yeah, when you're talking of the pass rate, you're talking of the pass rate for those in 2006, basically those who are 17 years and 18 years old who were the real cohort. Then you would get to that figure of 50. But through the years, you have a progression where people are retained because they have not progressed through the system. So you'll never get the 1 million, 1 point going through.
Hmm.
So even your denominator would be lower than that if you want to be very technical about it. But at this stage, in the way they are calculating, that is what it is. It will get the headlines, but we still have a, we have to deal with the children that we have to get through the system.
No, that's right. But the long and short of it is that that 75.1% on its own, without any context and without these kinds of footnoted caveats, is a deceptive number, isn't it? So when the minister says 75.1, and we all remember from school, anything above 70 kind of means you're one of the clever kids in the class. So 75.1 sounds really cool. Then we all stand up and we applaud. That is irresponsible from a public policy debate and discussion point of view.
The context of the 75.1 is in terms of everybody who basically wrote that examination, irrespective of what their age. We've got figures that talk of children ranging from 16 to 25. In fact, I'm surprised that there's even children at 25 as full-time learners. It's something we need to investigate. So in that context, the 75.1 is the figure that you give. If you want to focus on that group of learners who should have been, if they have never been progressed at any particular time, then what we're talking about, the 50, will be relevant.
But you, I don't understand why you can't just agree straightforwardly that the 75.1% number on its own is a very irresponsible way of sketching the true picture. I'm not saying that is what the minister is doing, because the minister is also dipping into these other conversations, despite what some critics are saying. But when we splash on the front page of the Star, Sunday Times, EWN news bulletins, the 75.1% number on its own, and it's perhaps a sign that many of us who work in the media are not numerate enough, that that is very deceptive analysis in terms of how you crunch the data to understand the true picture.
In fact, if you look at it, the minister, in her speech, basically that was one paragraph. She basically spewed out a number of paragraphs of data in that short space of 20 minutes.
Hmm.
So it's not us that control who puts the headlines. It could have been any other headline. In another newspaper, it would be the seven distinctions of another child, or a child who basically had no opportunity and did not pass, a tragedy. So what we're saying is we are giving it out there. We do this in a very short space of time, but there's more data. And as Equal Education has said, we need to go more deeper into these things. And that's what we are doing as well. Some of it may not see the discussion in the public because it's within department to assist us in terms of planning going forward so that where we want to assist and support learners, it's targeted.
Okay. 18 minutes after 10, we're talking about the matric pass rate, how to read that particular number, what is the true picture. We're going to move on. We are going to talk about what happens to those learners that don't progress. We're also going to talk about the quality of our matrics. Some of your tweets coming through, Mbazima Shiloa says, this pass rate for matric is like saying, because only 70% of eligible voters voted, a party getting 10% got 2%. I'm not sure about your math there, but I get the general point. Thought we're calculating not of those who started grade R 13 years ago or were in grade 10 3 years ago, but those who sat for the exam. We are doing that in Mbazima, but actually be careful of analogies because they can backfire with obvious counter analogy. If you have only 2% of voters going to the election, then you've got a problem that you need to talk about, even if one party gets 99% of the vote of the 2% who pitched. You must have a national conversation why your voter turnout is low. And that is the point I think Equal Education is making. I just don't think it's either or. Let's take a break then. More of this on the other side of this.
Eusebius Makaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
22 minutes after 10, we're talking about the matric data, how to read the results, what is the true picture, the quality of the matric passes, and then, of course, what is there to celebrate and where do the problems still lie and what are we going to do about it? Siyabonga, good morning. Okay, we've lost Siyabonga there. Leanne, I want to get back to you, right? I mean, presumably the overall question that we're interested in is actually a qualitative one rather than a numbers one, which is, if I am at university or at some post-tertiary education as an admissions officer, or if I'm running a business and I want to employ Troy, who's just finished matric, I want to know whether or not the results that I have in front of me is a basis for understanding what her actual skill sets are in terms of numeracy, communication, language, and just general knowledge, right? So when it comes to the quality of teaching of someone who has passed with eligibility for, say, for example, bachelor's or diploma, what is Equal Education's perspective on that question? Because that is probably as important as having a bun fight about the right way to communicate the numbers.
So just to say before that, that the likelihood of achieving matric and of achieving a degree has been increasing for Black youth, and that is worth celebrating. But the truth is, and the DBE acknowledges this, that school leavers aren't adequately prepared for university. Aside from not being prepared for the academic rigors, it is quite a culture shock. And that has to do, and I'm sure we're going to get there in the conversation, but that has to do with teaching and learning in the foundation phase and how children's fate is largely determined by the end of grade three rather than in that matric year alone.
Would you agree with that, Patty?
Yeah, I think what we have said as well is that the focus is not on the grade 12. We talk of our national strategy for learning and attainment, which starts from grade R, grade 1 to grade 12.
Hmm.
And in fact, if the foundation is right, in fact, even your grade R, if children could get an opportunity, that number has been increasing as well. Their chance of success is greater than those who have not had that exposure. That's clearly coming out. And that's where the emphasis is, that it was throughout the system. And when we had the annual national assessments, that gave us shocking results, but it clearly told us on the areas we needed to work on. And that has helped us to put in programs to look at where we could, especially in terms of reading, numeracy, going forward.
Okay, let's go to Springs. Maria, good morning to you and welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are you?
We're very well, thanks. What do you want to say?
I just want to say it's so sad because we, just to put it in plain words, I don't know who we are fooling really with this system. Because I remember when I was in grade 11, you know, going towards grade 12, and you find that the schools, they're not performing very well or they're not getting the percentage that they want. So what they end up doing is, let's say, for example, you're doing science and you're not good at math, pure math. They'll tell you to take math lit with the science subject, only to find out that at the university, they wouldn't take you that they went to science. At the end of the day, it's got a total 98%. Maringana couldn't apply because Bambik CV, I'm a subject. Or else, you know what they do? They tell you, it's okay, if you're doing seven subjects, the next four will bala next year. At the end of the day, one of our totally pass rates, which is higher, just to flaunt and show the public, it's okay, pass rate in my schools is higher. Umdana next year, the three subjects, or they're not going anyway. So the system, they're just fooling people around. It's not helping the children at all. It's helping them with their image.
Okay, thanks. Maria, skeptical there. Siyabonga, hello.
Yes, thanks, Eusebius. Just to be specific, in Ivory Park High School, learners who failed preparation exams last year, September, were refused the right to write their exams for December. So I agree with the previous caller. This is exactly what is happening. So what I want to know from your guest to CBS, is this allowed? If yes, why so? Because the school said refusing them the right to write exams, it's good for their school because they will add numbers of learners who will fail, and that will bring the school reputation down somehow, if that's the right term to use. So I don't think this is right, because learners should write the exam regardless of whether they failed the preparation exams or what. Please ask your guest.
Okay. I want to just move on to a slightly different question, and I'm going to start this time with you, Patty. I mean, you said in your first set of remarks that we are becoming more mature in how we are having these discussions and we're not obsessing about certain kinds of numbers. But there are some numbers which we ought to obsess about. If you have upwards of 500,000 learners 12, 13 years ago in the system who didn't make it to matric, I don't see how we can account for them being lost into the ether through all of them having died, having chosen after grade 10 to go to, I don't know, some other institution to start work, etc. Does DBE actually have a proper grip in empirical terms on why it is that hundreds of thousands of people who start in year one end up not finishing school in regulation time?
Basically, we've been giving an explanation of, as you said, that some may have dropped out along the way to join TVETs or they've repeated and so forth. What we're looking at, we don't have it right down to the actual individual learner, but that's what we want to move towards. And so we've linking up with other systems in government as well to track these learners. And I think because of the second chance, we've come with the second chance program as well, that irrespective of whether they finished their matric this year or 5 years ago, we need to go back and trace these learners and create. If you look at the current year, we had over 130,000 that basically did not pass. Some may write their supplementaries, but it's not going to be much. Maybe 10,000 would get through. So we need that to actually have a grip on that 100,000. So our unit in second chance will need to ensure that these learners are tracked so that we do not lose them. If they want to take up the opportunities, then you go forward. Now, that is something that we may not have been strong on in the past, but going forward, we need to make sure that each of these years that we go by, we do not lose these learners.
But we've been losing them year in and year out. Why?
Because I think your first call.
I mean, your job is to have kept track on that. It's great that you have a nice new program that you call Second Chance and you can be future oriented. But quite frankly, I want you to take accountability for why you haven't tracked them in the past.
Yeah, we haven't had the systems. And basically, it was that once you finish matric, it's no longer, you were not in our responsibility as basic education.
No, I'm not talking about the ones. Yeah. I'm not talking about post-secondary education. Sorry, we're speaking past each other here. I want to know whether the hundreds of thousands of people who start out in year one who don't finish within 12 years as one envisages, other than problems along the way, socioeconomic, educational, and what have you, what happens to them? Do we have a proper grip on what happens to those students?
No, we have a proper grip on the 12 million learners that are in the system. Some of them are basically, if you link up to what the progression policy is, they would probably be, they could fail in each of the phases once. That'll be four times in the 12 years. So they will take about 16 years.
Okay.
They are within our grasp. Mm. If they fall outside the network, we would not be able to pick them up, even if they've dropped out of school. And there's various reasons for that. I think Maria was touching on some of those, which are basically things that we need to arrest.
I'm so disappointed with my matric results.
Eusebius is on Twitter at Eusebius.
25 minutes before 11, if you're just joining us, we're in conversation with Leanne Janssen-Thomas from Equal Education, the head of policy there and training in our Cape Talk studio. And here with me in Johannesburg in our 702 studios, Betty Bediachi, Deputy Director General of Basic Education for Planning, Information and Assessments. And we're talking about what the true state of our matric results are in terms of their quality, how many children have been left behind over the years, what happens to them, how should we read the data, is it deceptively communicated by the department, was that a problem on the part of us, the media, and you, the rest of the public, in terms of what you tend to focus on in what are sometimes very long, complicated speeches, to be fair, on many of the officials' part, and also the minister. Leanne, I want to come back to you, right, depending on whether you go back to grade R, grade 1, or grade 2, we lost a lot of people, at least a million, only half a million along the way. Do we know what happens to them? You've heard Patty have a stab at answering that question. From an equal education perspective, do they go to the same place that missing socks go to?
Oh, gosh. So there's definitely a data gap here, both on the side of the DBE, but also on the side of DHET. So if you look at school leavers or people that leave the schooling system, people who are not in education, in employment or training. There are over 3 million of these young people in our country, and there's very little information on where they are or what they are doing. The DBE itself has a system called the Learner Unit Record Information Tracking System, and it's become better at estimating grade repetition rates. But I think what is missing is that qualitative data on who these young people are and where they're going. Stats SA, according to them, a significant proportion of young people who are not in school, the reason is that they cannot afford school fees. But I think that needs closer interrogation because of the high proportion of no-fee schools that we have in this country. It may be that these schools are asking for a voluntary donation, which cannot be afforded, or because those learners are seeking a particular quality of education.
Do we understand, Leanne, the different kinds of reasons why learners drop out of school? I've seen recently, for example, some people saying that even in private schools, for that matter, where they're impressive 100%, 99.5% matric pass, 80% of them managing to get it with eligibility for a bachelor's degree that they could potentially go and study for, that some learners are discouraged from sitting the exams if schools think that this will be bad for their overall data that they will put on the website of the school.
So this is the thing. This uncritical preoccupation with matric results has these sort of dangerous consequences. So there's what's called gatekeeping or culling, where when learners are held back in a particular grade or are encouraged to go to a different school or to write as private candidates. There's also teaching to the test that is happening. And so If the pass rate goes down and schools and the department gets a roasting, these are the kinds of repercussions that you're going to see. So, for instance, schools who receive 100% pass rate, there are certain incentives for that. And, of course, the schools are threatened about not getting high matric pass rates. We need to give schools and the system generally a little bit of leeway to give those learners who are struggling the opportunity to actually write the matric exams.
And in fact, another issue that I think we should pick up on, of course, which you mentioned during one of our breaks, Betty, is the obsession with the ranking of the provinces. There are also differences there that are obscure that we need to interrogate. Besides discouraging, as Leanne said, someone from sitting an exam, having culling or whatever you want to call it, another way in which you can guarantee that the top line mark or the top line number is impressive for your school or your region is also to discourage students from sitting certain kinds of subjects that are perceived, real or imagined, to be incredibly difficult subjects. So you might find some provinces or some regions or some schools actually attempting to do all the hard work with subjects that are desperately needed by society and the economy, but it might mean that the results don't look as impressive as in other schools.
Yeah, I think I would start with this issue of where you have the gatekeeping. And according to the policy, a child would cannot fail more than once. And that's why we've come up with this progression policy where if the second time they fail, they'll have to go to grade 12. You would have found in the past, provinces would have held them back and then they would basically stop going to school and we would not even follow up where they are. And then the trend we're talking about would continue. The progression has forced provinces to basically ensure that these children go to school. They need to be supported, which is what the minister insisted. And if you look at the results, we gave 34,000 actually set, but 17,000 passed. If we had left them to their own devices, they would not have got a chance. And we know why maybe in the past they may have failed, because maybe they were not supported through the system as well, and that created some deficits there. So that's where you have this issue about the progress learner and the multiple education opportunities was to your caller from Ivory Park. I've been told that it's part of our minister's constituency, and I think she may follow up on that. But there again, on the multiple education opportunities, was that in your trial exam, if you had failed more than three subjects, then the principal had to discuss with the parent and the child that they should not write the full complement. They should not have been stopped from not writing at all. They should have written maybe two or three, and then they would get an opportunity to write again at the pace that they wanted. Now, the point you raised about the differentials is if you take a province like KZN, who has over the years had a beating in terms of their pass rate, But when you dig deeper and you look at the mathematics to maths literacy ratio, they have actually got maybe a 55 to 45 maths versus maths lit compared to some of the well-performing provinces that are ranked at the top. But what is it we were looking for as a country? We want to encourage our children to do maths as well. And you've had a situation which I think Maria has touched on, where a child is encouraged to do maths, gets a distinction, but if they had been told to do mathematics, they would have easily passed it either at a C or a B.
Yeah.
So we've got these things which when it's brought to our attention, we are trying to correct. And if you look at our reports, in particular the school report, we've actually also indicated the number of progress learners that were there. A school report will have the school with its total number that was enrolled at the beginning of the year, the number that wrote, and then you'll have the progress. And you will see that maybe you have 100. Mm. Out of 100 learners at the beginning of the year, then you had only 52 sitting, and you get 100%. It means nothing.
Sure.
Because you basically discarded 48.
Ah, we've just lost Eileen there. I wonder whether we can step back from this discussion and look at the big picture a little bit. It is unsurprising, of course, Leanne, and this is the other issue we need to frame in the national conversation about our matric results, that there's a correlation between the socioeconomic disparities in different communities, between different provinces as well for that matter, and these particular results, which is why you find that if you look year in and year out at the schools that do incredibly well with pass rates upwards of 80%, that they tend to come from the wealthier schools. 82% of them will typically come from quintile five schools. So how important is it, and can you frame for us how we do this then, to also link this national conversation about the matric pass rate, what is the right numbers to look at, to the reality that this discussion must be located within the context of all the other structural inequities within society?
Right. So I think that's why the minister in her speech every year emphasizes the performance of the no-fee schools.
Yes.
And the truth is that if you attend a school where there have been weak learning foundations, it increases the likelihood of you dropping out or performing poorly in the later grades and in matric. And so I know I'm emphasizing this, but that's the context in which we've got to see this matric pass rate. And we've got to think about how difficult it is to reach matric and to pass matric well. You know the circumstances that many schools in rural areas are in, how difficult teaching and learning is. And as we always emphasize, even just getting to school, dying to access an education.
Absolutely. Eileen, I think we've got you now on a clearer line. Welcome to the show.
Eusebius, good day, and how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Eileen.
Good. Eusebius, I've got a burning issue, especially to your guest from the DBE. As a Setswana lecturer, as he is in charge of planning, I think one thing that we can do to correct the situation in order to get quality results and not quantity, in as far as the percentages we are talking about, is to accommodate languages also during the year when they go for their camps during the holidays in September. All languages seems to be left behind. And really, it is true between me and everybody that for students to comprehend, language should be enforced. As a Setswana lecturer, let me tell you, our students that we get from the university at course one, they pass their Setswana at 40, and they're coming to do Setswana first language, where we intend producing language specialists, communication students, language practitioners. We are not doing good service to languages. We're concentrating on maths. These people are not able to comprehend this maths, whether maths literacy, whether pure maths, because of languages. Let us go back to the drawing board and accommodate languages during this preparation times, where we give all this money to science and we think we can produce good scientists when they are not eloquent and cannot express themselves in that science that they think they understand.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's a beautiful intervention. The difficulty here, Patty, of course, is right that we're having a somewhat dry but very important conversation about how to read the final year results. But the entire value chain matters in terms of what kind of citizen you are producing by the time they leave the system. And if we had to have that conversation, we'll be here for 3 hours, and people will have their different pet subjects that they think correlate best with a quality worker in the workplace, a good citizen who's politically engaged. As a political animal, for example, I wish it was compulsory for everyone to take history. For Eileen, as a linguist, it's going to be language, and she might even find some supporting pedagogical research that suggests a correlation between that and performance in science as well. How do you respond to her without boiling the ocean? But she is introducing other aspects of this conversation that are important.
Yeah, we were talking about mainly mathematics, but language is also under our radar. In that, in this examinations, we found that there are certain subjects that need attention in the African languages. But what we have said is that when you're at grade 1 to grade 3, basically you are taught in your mother tongue. And the majority of our learners basically are not, in the end, when they get to grade 12, are doing either English or Afrikaans in their home language, which is our home language, but not necessarily their mother tongue. Mm. So you're already at a disadvantage. So what we've had is that switch at grade 4 towards English or Afrikaans, we've now had programs brought in where there's English across the curriculum, which starts from grade 1, as well as the issue of bringing in an additional way, especially in the schools which do not have an African language, to learn an African language in that respect. So some of the provinces basically in accommodating this basically have to cover 3 to 4, but I think in Gauteng, they have to cover the entire 11. So that's a pressure on them. But language itself, the basis, if it's set correctly, would assist in the sciences and the maths, because the questions have to be read. Where there are word problems, we've identified children have struggled. There are some subjects where the content and the written material, history in particular, business studies and so forth, you have to know your language, otherwise you basically are handicapped in that respect. So language is part of our, the focus to ensure that there's improvement, and that's the only way we'll bring up our literacy. And the international tests, which was referred to earlier as well, have shown that while we're making progress, it's not fast enough.
Well, you're not making much progress if our 10-year-olds can't read, so let's not even sugarcoat it. We've got a huge problem in terms of literacy. We can talk about it on the other side of this break.
No.
Sorry, Patty, we took a break there. You were about to sugarcoat the 10-year-olds not being able to read with comprehension disaster.
Yeah, we're saying that we are not performing as well as other countries in that study. There were 3 other African countries, Egypt and Morocco. But basically, it doesn't mean the children cannot read. They cannot read in terms of the standards in comparison in that test.
It's shocking.
Yeah.
But you agree, it's shocking. I mean, there's nothing more to be said beyond that other than taking accountability and then talking about the interventions.
Yeah, but maybe...
Because all of you guys in DBA, firstly, you assume you haven't read the report, but beyond that, you also want to give yourself a pat on the back for having taken part in that particular study in terms of getting the benchmark. That's great, but then we've got to deal with what the benchmarks then actually tell us in terms of the comparators with other countries in the Global South who were in that particular study.
Yeah, we have taken part in that test irrespective of what our performance would have been. In the past, you would have found that at a certain time, certain ministers have stopped the country from taking part so that we do not... we could not handle the bad news. Mm. But our minister has gone ahead irrespective of what the outcome would be. We do not celebrate it, but we say that we have programs like the early grade reading program and so forth, which would look at improving these readings. And that does not, it's bad, but it's from where we were 5 and 10 years ago, we have made a movement in that direction, but not fast enough.
David, good morning. We've lost David there. Penny, hello.
Hi, yes, thank you. My son was 3% short on the English marking to get a distinction. And throughout the year, he's been averaging 85% mostly. Now, he's short of one distinction. He needs 6 distinctions for getting a bursary. And I've tried phoning the Pretoria phone number. I was on the line for an hour. And then they said, oh, you must try again later. And I tried other 2 means of phone numbers, and I've also done an email. And this is urgent. How do I go about to know for a four-way student how to get a remark done on forms to fill and where to go from here?
Do I okay, I've got no clue, Penny, and that wasn't quite the discussion we're having today. But, Troy, do you happen to have an answer in your back pocket there?
I'm going to double check, but I'm pretty sure that if he contacts the school, and they will be able to assist with advising him, but I'll get you an answer before the end of the show.
Okay, sorry to put you on the spot there. David, hello.
How are you doing, Eusebius?
Good, thanks. What do you want to say?
Awesome. I had the privilege of spending a month with people who were putting together the Second Chance program last year.
Okay.
We were recording the actual production for it. And these are teachers. These are people who are literally involved with the Matric program. And I asked them, what is the challenge as far as they're concerned? And they said, it's the comprehension of the language, of the English language. Because 90% of exam is written in English. And these kids, if you ask them a question, discuss, or you say to them, list, or you say to them, give me advantages and disadvantages, to them, they will give you everything they studied on that particular subject, and they won't zoom in into the specific question that you're asking them. And that tends to be a time waster for them in exams and so forth. So the biggest challenge that you're facing, and I had the lady that called Elian said, Setswana as an example, but really, kids write in English. They write 90% of the exams in English, but they don't understand half the questions, particularly kids that come from township schools. I know this because I'm one of those kids. And those were the challenges that we had. And I had your guest saying it's on their radar, the language is on their radar. It shouldn't be on their radar. It should be high on their list because it happens to be one of the biggest challenges. If you don't understand the question, you won't know how to answer it. It's as simple as that.
Okay, Leanne, we're running out of time. We've got 2 minutes left. How do we improve at a high level in terms of what we should focus on strategically? How do we begin to improve both the quality of education and also making sure that the real numbers are as impressive as the not-so-real numbers?
By focusing on the foundation phase. So the interventions in the later grades are important, but we need to be keeping an eye on the learning of grades, children in grade R to grade 3, and that they are being provided with a solid foundation in reading, which is the foundation for all later learning. And it's not just learning in English, but as the Pearls showed, children can't read for meaning in their mother tongue. And if you have a solid basis in your mother tongue, it makes the acquisition of a second language easier. It improves that acquisition. So I'd really like to see us having more conversations this year about how to address the reading crisis. And the DBE's EGRS study has given us an intervention that is really promising. And so we want to urge them to scale up that intervention to as many schools as possible so we can support teachers to teach reading. Because unfortunately, our universities aren't adequately training foundation phase teachers how to teach reading.
Patty, from your side, what are the benchmarks the department sets itself in terms of success criteria going forward, and how do we get there?
Yeah, our focus is on that we're looking at from grade R to grade 12, the performance. I think we agree with what Equal Education said about the foundation phase, but there are issues also in the grade 7, 8, and 9, which is basically the feeder into the FET, which some of the problems we're talking about, if addressed at those levels, would minimize the challenges there. And I think we've dealt with the issue of having access to education. But clearly it's about raising the bar in terms of the quality we're providing. And what we're saying, and the minister is saying as well, there's no silver bullet, but it starts at the school. And ownership by the parents, the teachers, and the school leadership, as well as the district. And the provincial and the national department has its part to play, but on its own it cannot fix all the problems.
Okay. Leanne, thank you so much for joining us today. All the best for 2018 and keep on doing the excellent work that you guys do. And Patty, the same to you as well. Thank you so much for coming to engage on this very important issue.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Eusebius.
Cheers.